It's 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. When you're on the quest for liberty, you don't get the weekends off. And now, your host of Liberty on the Air, Mr. Dan Fishman.
Thank you very much, Matt McLaughlin. Also in studio with Ken Van Tassel, producer Pat, rocking the tunes back there in the engineer's booth. Thank you, Pat. So, this week's show, we're going to talk about a bunch of different things, but the big news that's going on in Boston right now is Amazon's coming to town. I don't mean Diana, Queen of the Amazons, Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot. I mean Amazon.
Is that actually how you pronounce it?
It is actually Gal Gadot.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen the name. I just don't know. Like,
I think it means like riverbank or something like that. Something in Hebrew.
I thought it was more like Godot.
No, it's definitely Gadot. Anyway, so Amazon's coming to town, and Boston put up a pretty good bid. A lot of other places in New England put in good bids. In fact, I would love to see Londonderry get it because Londonderry's bid was super tongue-in-cheek in that. Well, first of all, they said, obviously, you know, big win in that there's no state income tax here, so all your employees automatically get a 6% raise. But also, they said, listen, if you open up in Boston next a year from now, you're going to wake up in your 1,000-square-foot apartment with that you're paying $4,000 a month for in rent and have a two-hour commute to get to the Suffolk Downs site. And you think to yourself, I could be in New Hampshire. It's a good point. Other places put together a bid. Worcester put together a bid. Lowell and Chelmsford put together a bid. But chances are pretty good. It's going to go to Boston. It's going to go to the Suffolk Downs site.
You really think so?
I do.
You don't think it's just going to go to New York because the people on Amazon would rather just walk out of their apartments, their Manhattan apartments, and be at work?
No, there's a pretty big Amazon shop here in Cambridge already. Supposedly, the inside track says that there are Amazon people are already lobbying. New York is not a good tech town. There are some businesses set there, but in terms of the quality of graduates that you're getting coming out, it's nothing like Boston.
Yeah, but because those people would never move to Manhattan. Those graduates.
No, well, I mean, there's a reason why, 90% of the startups coming out of the East Coast start up here. It's because of the fact that the college students start on them when they're in college. They go work in the various offices, stuff like that, interns. And the market for it is really competitive, too. I know that a good friend of mine started off at a company I was at, and we were lucky to get him. It was lucky that I knew him. He was a friend. But the big question, of course, is, how does that tie into liberty? And the reason why it ties into liberty is because I like to gamble. With Suffolk Downs having horse racing, I can legally use the TVG app on my phone and I can watch horse racing on TV or wherever I choose to watch it. And I can bet on my phone because the law is that if you live in a state that has legalized horse gambling, then you can bet on your phone while you're in that state. And if Suffolk Downs goes away, there are no more horse tracks in Massachusetts. And I can't gamble anymore. And so there's a couple of things that are going wrong with that. First of all, it's sad that Suffolk Downs is going away. It's going away because of government regulation, right? If it were just, if they didn't have to pay, you know, a third of their profits, all these other things to the state, there would still be a horse track where there was racing. Right. In general, gambling parlors, horse tracks don't fail if they're left on their own devices. They fail because their profit margins become razor thin because of what they end up having to pay as the VIG. They pay the VIG to government. And therefore, that's a real problem. However, the biggest issue about that is that when we talk about the gambling, it's going away. Because people didn't gamble, right? If people had been going to Suffolk Downs all the time, it would have been profitable. We would have still had that opportunity. And so I want to make a pitch to people who have some gambling going on, some gambling available to them in terms of, for example, right now, right? You can wager DraftKings. I do that. I know we have a league. Are you in my league?
I am not in your league.
Interesting. So I'm in a league with all of Matt's friends, but not Matt, apparently. But
this is the first I am hearing of this. I am shocked, shocked. Yeah.
So what we do in that situation is we get together every We only play Saturday. We only play Sunday and Monday games, so we don't care about the Thursday night game.
Does anyone care about you? You're not alone in that.
No, I mean, there are some people who do like a weekly game. There are some people who only do the Thursday night game. And that's one of the nice things about it is that there's this wide variety of what you can do. And you can get in. There are really cheap bets. So I don't want to lose my right to gamble in the same way that I've lost my right to bet on horses in Massachusetts. So I'm asking. Well, I'm asking everybody, you know, for liberty's sake, sign into one of the daily fantasy sites. Put in a dollar, make a dollar bet. You know, put in $2 in case you lose. But they have really easy thing, really easy bets, like ones where you just have to pick, be in the top half of the group who've wagered to win. So you don't have to be.
They're not just straight bets. I mean, you have to pick a team, right? And if your team does the best, is that how that works?
Well, that's how one aspect of daily fantasy works. If you're doing the fantasy football thing, yes. And then it's still pretty good because essentially you pick based on salaries, stuff like that. There's a fair bit of skill involved in that. They also do golf. They do they don't do horse racing, but they do auto racing and other sports, hockey, basketball, stuff like that. But they have these big pools like the one that we play in. It's winner take all. So whoever has the best score wins out of the 14 guys in our league. But they have ones where they have like 500 people in, and as long as you're in the top 250, you get the money from the people who are in the bottom 250. So you don't even have to be awesome. You just have to be better than everybody else. So it's one of those things, though, that it's a right that's not exercised is a right that's lost. And
so that's gambling is an American right?
I think so. I mean, well, it's interesting. I would argue that in many respects, it's a First Amendment, right? Because, I mean, it's sort of a speech. It's your action. There's nothing about what you're doing that hurts anybody. Why would you not be allowed to gamble? And in fact, obviously the state doesn't think that gambling is harmful because the largest gambling in the state is the state lottery, right? And I think every state at this point in time has a state lottery going on. So the state lottery, gambling, there are other rights that we lose if we don't exercise. One of the big ones and one of the most controversial ones is open carry. And this freaks people out sometimes. They see somebody walking down the street.
And just to be clear, open carry meaning having a visible gun on you.
Yes, exactly. And usually, in fact, most people, in general, people aren't freaked out so much when they see handguns because usually you can see like either police officers or, I mean, in Texas, it's certainly relatively common to see people with pistols, holstered pistols, out in public. But if you see somebody with a long gun on their back, that bothers some people. But the problem is they don't have any rationale for being bothered by it. They just bothered by it because of something that's in their head somewhere. In the same way that, you know, Trayvon Martin bothered, I can't think of the guy's name now. George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman said, you know, there's something I don't like about that guy. I'm going to go up and confront him. I'm going to ask him what he's doing here. And of course, it ended up in a confrontation. Trayvon Martin wasn't doing anything wrong. Nothing wrong. In the same way that if you're walking down the street with a rifle on your back in a town that allows that, you're not doing anything wrong. People shouldn't be calling the police and saying, there's a man walking down the street doing absolutely nothing wrong. I need you to come up and interrogate him. And actually, that's a double whammy, right? Because it's not just a Second Amendment. It's also a Fourth Amendment. It's unreasonable search and seizure. And so,
is it an unreasonable search if someone can see the gun right on you?
Yes.
Is it
because you're not doing anything wrong.
But it's not a search.
When they call the police and the police come and stop you.
Well, if they stop you, but if the police come and say, hey, what are you doing? And you have the right to carry a gun and they don't do anything, that's not – I mean, I sort of see your point, but I don't think it's necessarily – I think people – in many areas, aren't used to guns. People who haven't fired a gun,
sure,
or don't live in an area where hunting is really a thing. I think people are, but I think I basically agree with your point. But I think someone walking down with what to many people would look like some sort of military-style rifle slung over their shoulder. I don't think it's crazy that someone would go, hey, maybe that person isn't just going down to the store to get some milk because their milk's sour, and just carries that around every day. I don't necessarily
I'm thinking of the fish called Wanda scene here. I thought to myself, where could he be going with those two shotguns at this time in the morning? You're right.
I mean, I agree, but that's also part of the education process. If someone, you know, I mean,
right,
I think it's, you know, people are obviously sort of extra, you know, hopefully vigilant at this time.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's why it actually is important that people exercise those rights. Because if they don't, part of the exercise is the education. And that you're sadly, you're often educating law enforcement as well. But you're educating people that there is nothing inherently dangerous about a person walking down the street with a firearm, any more than it's just as unreasonable to be afraid of that as it is to be afraid of a person of a different color than you're used to seeing walking through your neighborhood. There's no rationale for it. Now, you can make an argument. You could say, oh, you know what? I happen to think that African Americans are involved in a lot more crimes. And that's the same argument that you're going to use and say, oh, well, guns are involved in crimes. The gun didn't commit the crime. Black person doesn't commit a crime. Crimes are committed by criminals. Nothing about the appearance or what somebody's carrying makes them a criminal. And that's why it's critical that we do exercise these
rights.
Well,
if they're carrying evidence of the crime they just committed, then that would be.
Well, so.
Got you there.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Logic. Yes. Okay. But there are other rights that people really should be exercising as well. One of the biggest ones, every year there are complaints about certain books. Catcher in the Rye, The Portrait of Dorian Gray. And this year in Alabama, they put a not in Alabama, it's California. Dianne Feinstein said that the Anarchist Cookbook should be removed from the internet. Now, the Anarchist Cookbook is...
Well, that's just very easy to do, right? To just remove something from the internet?
Dianne Feinstein's someone that's very well-versed in how the internet works, I'm sure.
Right. So...
Very rational woman.
The more you want something gone from the internet, the more it becomes prevalent on the internet.
Right. That's the Streisand theory, right?
Streisand effect, I believe.
Streisand effect, yes.
More recently, the Beyoncé effect. But
what did she
for do? My generation. She had an image that she didn't like, and she asked people to... She actually had her lawyers try to remove it from the internet.
Really? And it did
and it became
work.
A living meme. Yeah.
Outstanding. Yeah. So the Anarchist Cookbook is old. I read it when I was in high school. I'm pretty sure it hasn't changed then. It has some, you know, throwback to original domestic terrorists. You know, some stuff in there about, you know, how to build stupid bombs. A tremendous amount about drug information. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was something about – I think I remember someone in college, and it might have been from that, something about drying banana peels in like a toaster
drying
oven.
Banana peels, grinding up morning glory seeds, licking hallucinogenic toads. The Anarchist cookbook covered it all. But again, it's one of those rights that people can exercise. So you know what? If you want to stand up for liberty, do one of these things, right? Sign up for an online wagering account.
Lick a toad.
Lick a toad. Buy a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. Make sure that you are exercising these rights, because a right that is not exercised is lost forever. So, you know, somebody pointed out on the Facebook Live feed, the number one right that you have that most people don't exercise. It's not bathing. It's voting. Because it's true. Our voting turnout numbers are horrendous. And you consider the number of people who don't have the right to vote. And
actually, I'm willing to bet more people vote in Massachusetts than own a firearm.
Oh, yeah. No, no question about that. I completely agree with that. But I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, because what does it cost you to vote? And what does it cost you to own a firearm?
A state-issued ID for a firearm.
Right, which is relatively cheap. Compared to, well, no, but you have to own a firearm, you have to buy a gun. And guns are relatively expensive.
No, no, absolutely not. Guns are dirt cheap.
Really?
The gun, you could probably buy a firearm less than it costs you to actually get the license in Massachusetts.
I saw an AR-15 for sale for like
If you want to $1,500, you can spend as much as you want on a firearm as you can in any kind of consumer good.
If you wanted to buy a
could buy a rifle for $99.
Really, like a .22?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or like a mini 14, you could probably find a used one.
Interesting.
So the AR thing is kind of like a status thing. People like to build the most expensive AR rifle they can.
Right.
But in terms of practical, a firearm, if you wanted to buy one firearm for self-defense or something like that.
Interesting. Well, so what about is it the same thing for pistols?
Also relatively cheap.
There's the whole spectrum. There's like really crappy ones that you could get. But I mean, the standard police issue 357, or probably like a Glock,
okay,
9mm,
Belgian,
Austrian, $380.
I was in Europe, excellent country,
except they're more expensive in Massachusetts, of course. But.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's good to know. So you're right. I bet you that more people, a lot more people vote than own guns. But the number is still surprisingly low in terms of the number of people turn out for elections when you consider how few people actually have that right. So to Ken's point, I think a few weeks ago you had said, Dan, do you really think they'd let you vote if it changed anything? I'm still the optimist in that I do think that voting actually makes a difference. But
I think voting clearly makes a difference.
Voting just reinforces the majority's will to beat down on the people that think differently than them. And that's basically all it does.
Well, there's sometimes that to voting, for example,
I don't know. Some would argue that the majority lost in the last election.
The majority did lose. There's no question about that.
Yeah, in presidential politics.
Right, in presidential politics, we haven't in the past used a majority as the decision.
But you're talking about more local elections.
Yeah, state and local elections.
Right, but we've repealed things.
Yeah, we made the income tax go back to 5%. Let us know how that's going for us.
Well, all right, we did repeal the gas tax, but you're right. Yeah. There's a lot of things.
But all that means is that they're going to shift the burden somewhere else to try to make up that money that they wanted in their budget.
Sure. There's no question about that.
Beacon Hill politics is basically a game of trying to produce the illusion that the people have any say in the government when they're really going to meet their bottom lines in the way that they have to keep their machine running and how they like it to.
But I mean, that's,
we don't have a say in how anything goes up there.
Especially skeptical. You're saying that
that's realistic.
You're saying that you think that all the races for House representative are fixed.
Well, most of them are pointless because you know who's going to win. Right. There's a select few where there's some kind of.
So should we gamble on those races then? Can we get that?
I believe that there actually are.
You can take political gambling money websites on the underdogs, and you'd make a fortune in Massachusetts.
I think in England they do that a lot.
Yeah. I think there are people who made a lot of money betting on Trump throughout the entire election cycle. All right,
but the problem with that is, I mean, the answer to that, I guess, would be voting for other people, voting other people in. I mean, if you're saying the votes don't
more people,
I mean, more people running.
More people showing up, exercising their right to vote.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is, someone's like, oh, I guess so-and-so is running. He's going to win. I'm not going to do well, or maybe they like him. They don't. I mean.
Sure. Voter apathy is, there's no question, it's a tremendous problem. And I think it was like 75% of the state rep races had no contest in Massachusetts.
It was a little over 50, yeah.
50?
Okay. But I mean, the casual voters are going to be the ones least likely to cast their vote for, say, someone who's running a third-party campaign or a campaign out of left field, someone who's actually talking about doing real change. They're not even going to be recognizing the name on the ballot.
Right. They're just going to vote for the only name they've ever heard.
Or the party that they always vote for.
Right. And yeah, I mean, those are all legitimate claims. On the other hand, I still would like to see more people voting. I think that being involved, exercising your right, is the first step of exercising more responsibility in terms of your citizenship. So a couple other rights that people aren't exercising right now. The Fourth Amendment gives you the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. Just had a big deal up in Vermont and New Hampshire.
Well, it actually protects your right.
Right. It protects your right to be – what did I say?
It doesn't give you any rights.
It protects your right, right. So your right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. Recently, just in New York and New Hampshire, the way the law works for border agents to be able to search you is that if you are within 100 miles of a border, an international border, or the coast, they have exceptional powers. Border agents have exceptional powers to search you.
100 miles?
100 miles, yeah. So almost all of New England is inside of that area for special powers. And so as a result, and they've been using it a lot in Boston recently, especially targeting Italian and Portuguese communities, Brazilian communities, looking for people and essentially saying, you know, do you have any papers? Can you show us what you got? Things that in theory you shouldn't be able to do, but because it's Boston and we're a major seaport, because we are inside of that mythical line, a lot of people are losing their casual rights on a daily basis. So we've been talking about a lot of rights exercised, not exercised, rights that are not exercised or lost. I'm going to continue in that vein, but I'm going to lighten it up a little bit, talk a little bit about the fact that Donald Trump has announced that he is not going to exercise his right to continue to suppress the Kennedy information. And so I'm wondering what you guys think we're going to learn when the Kennedy stuff is revealed.
I honestly have no idea. I mean, that case is obviously fascinating to many, many people and all sorts of theories of whether or not there was one shooter, multiple shooters, and aliens. That sort of stuff. Aliens, of course. Was it the mob? Did Frank Sinatra help out? Was it was it Castro? Was it Cuba? Was it
Ted Cruz's father, as Trump has previously mentioned?
It's 100% right. I'd forgotten about that, but you're right. In the debates, Donald Trump suggested that Ted Cruz's father was involved in the Kennedy assassination.
And that's why the paper.
Maybe that's why he's releasing it.
Yeah.
You know, there's other things that I
could
I'd
you
like.
Imagine if he released it and that was true?
That would well, it's an interesting question because can he falsify that information? I mean, he may claim that. He may say.
Well, I think National Security team gets to see the unredacted versions that have been released.
Yeah, they're FBI and CIA files that have been around him.
Right, but
many of them have been released, sure, but redacted.
I'm pretty sure many Congress people have seen the actual text of that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, he could say they were all lying, right? I mean, it wouldn't be the first time. I mean, it's like the painting, right? He has a Renoir. This came out this week as well, that there's a Renoir that's in the Chicago Institute of Art, and it's been there for 100 years. Well known that is the original Renoir, and Trump has a copy of it. However, he insists that it is the original.
Well, he probably had it stolen.
He knows
and
it's the original. He painted
something
it
else.
Well, right.
We've never seen The Freshman.
Sure, or that's actually that story is based on the Mona Lisa was stolen, and it was missing for 4 years, and then it was surprisingly returned, and you know, did they come back? Did they return the real one? Did they return the fake? I don't know, but. So Trump's going to return the Trump's going to release the Kennedy papers. I hope he.
Well, he left himself an out though, because you know, he couched his statement by saying, you know, a subject to the receipt of further information, he's going to release them.
Well,
but what do we think? Why? I mean,
why is he doing
it? Was in the '90s, right? They said another 25 years or something. It was like,
yeah, 1992, Congress mandated these documents be released within 25 years.
Was it Bill Clinton or was it George Bush?
It was Congress, but you mean which president?
Which president
signed it?
Yeah, we don't know.
It would be
probably Clinton.
92 sounds like Clinton.
Yeah,
but just
actually 92 is the election, so it's Bush.
What do we think's on that? I'm just really curious. Like, why would they keep holding it? I'm not trying to be all conspiracy theory,
You're right. What's on there that could be so explosive, especially in today's environment? When I mean. Goodness.
We could use the distraction.
Right. So I think that...
Or is it just that the answer is just so simple and once we all find out, we'll all stop talking about it?
I don't know. But you know who's going to have a theory about this? Scott. Scott, thanks for calling in. What do you know?
Good evening, Mr. Fishman. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Good. I believe that what you're going to find is what we've known for a lot and other things. For example, that Kennedy kept that JFK had a brothel in the White House. Because you have to understand, J. Edgar Hoover hated him.
Yeah.
He had a brothel in the White House sleeping with all kinds of women. That old man Kennedy bought him the election in West Virginia because in those days, West Virginia was rabidly anti-Catholic. They were solidly Protestant state. He had to buy off West Virginia so his son could win the presidency.
Chicago, also, too, right? There's a big voting controversy in Chicago with the Daily Machine.
That's right. The mob, to get him involved. That old man Kennedy was an anti-Semite. was made money as a bootlegger.
Would this stuff be in the files, though? I mean,
I really believe so.
Or is it just, yeah. I mean, well, this might be my sort of ignorance. I'm just assuming that those files have to do with just the assassination, but not just, is it other there, Kennedy there, stuff?
The Chicago theory, I mean, that
I've heard that. I just didn't know if it was actually in those files.
That is a common theory in that, you know, Chicago, the mob came through. Nixon actually, I mean, should have won. By all accounts, he probably did. But that they fixed the election results in Chicago, the Daily Machine and the mob. But then when Kennedy didn't come through for them, that's what triggered the assassination. That's been a pretty common theory for a while.
You're going to find a lot of stuff in there to embarrass the Kennedy family. And I have no sympathy for the Kennedy family. Let's be honest. They've gotten with murder. In Massachusetts, they're put on a pedestal. They're God. But let me tell you, they've done so many rotten things over the years that if an average person did what they did, they would be thrown in jail and never see the light of day.
Fair enough, Scott. Thank you very much for a good, sensible call. It really contributed a lot to the discussion. Yeah, especially, you know, I do know the corruption in Chicago. I have a friend who was connected. His first job was at age 14. When he was a building inspector. They gave him a hard hat and the guy went around and said, make sure all the buildings are there, check off a piece of paper and come back at the end of the day. So,
yeah, I mean, you want to talk about what's going to be in these documents. If they come out, I'm actually on the fence of it being relatively benign. I mean, a lot of the JFK scholars think it's going to be information about Lee Harvey Oswald's trips to Mexico City a few weeks before the assassination, where he tried to visit Soviet Cuban embassies, where he maybe tried to, cut a deal with them or something. And I think you'll find that the reason that a lot of this information was hidden was really just to try to keep from souring relationships with Mexico and Cuba.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how we could
do that
with Cuba, but
well,
on the other hand,
prevent all-out war.
Yeah, maybe so. All right. So we hit the Trump-Kennedy thing. I want to talk briefly about the fact that in England, the NHS, National Health Service, which is a single payer, has announced that people who are overweight and people who smoke will no longer be scheduled for surgery, which is a pretty interesting statement on where you get to when you socialize medicine.
Any surgery?
I'm going to assume that like dental surgery they could probably do. But essentially, they've sort of said, listen, we're wasting our resources on you because you're a smoker and you're probably not going to live.
I'm overweight and I break my arm and I need a couple of pins put in. They won't do that.
They probably would do something like that. I confess I don't know the details, but I would say that like, you know, if you needed open heart surgery, but you were a smoker, they would say, yeah, sorry. You can get it done, but you're going to have to pay for it yourself. Your state-run paid health insurance is no longer picking up the cost of high-cost procedures for people who are jeopardizing their own health. Now, as a former smoker, I wish I had never started. I smoked a pack a day for many years. I did eventually quit. And I recognize the fact that, given all the things I know now, I can't tell you that 21-year-old Dan wouldn't make the same mistakes. And if you told me that I couldn't smoke at all, that's not going to stop me. If anything, I mean, we had a show about that. That makes me more inclined to do what you told me I can't do. I don't know that you're ever going to be able to stop people from smoking through pure education. But I do know that if you're paying into a system, you ought, with the idea that you're paying into a health insurance pool that everybody is part of, you ought to be able to get your part of that out. And if they're going to ban people for smoking or for being overweight, which I think is actually reasonable, you shouldn't force them to pay into the system in the first place. Somebody knows that they're a smoker and they're not going to be able to pay.
Well, is that system insurance per se, or is that health care? I mean, it's sort of a semantical line, whereas insurance is meant for insurance isn't meant to cover everything. Like insurance, you get insurance on your car and you get in a fender bender and you have a deductible,
Right.
But if your car gets destroyed, it's like, hey, now we can take care of.
Well, one of the famous statements before Obamacare came into place was that 80% of the bankruptcies in the United States prior to 2008 involved medical bills, and 80% of those people had health insurance. So even with their health insurance, they went bankrupt because of the large medical bills that they accumulated.
We really haven't had real health insurance in this country in a long time, though, because they're forced to provide things that are not considered things that insurance would cover. Like routine doctor visits are something that, you know, insurance providers can't offer emergency-only plans in the United States. They're not allowed to.
Right.
And technically, a pre-existing condition is the exact opposite of what insurance is for. You get insurance in case something happens. You don't get insurance. You know, if I don't have car insurance and I go out and get in a car accident, I can't go buy car insurance to fix my car.
Right.
Or maybe you'd find someone to sell you insurance retroactive at a much higher rate or something like that even maybe.
Right.
But well, yeah, they could vary what they're offering you based on the conditions of whatever you're trying to insure.
And actually, I mean, I do believe that there is car insurance like that. You know, if you are high risk, you can still get car insurance.
I'm not talking about high risk. I'm talking about I don't have insurance. I got in a car accident today.
Yesterday, yeah.
Tomorrow, I buy car insurance and tell them, hey, I want to get insurance, but I totaled my car. Right. I'd like to pay $500. You know, I'd like to pay $100 a month, and you give me a new car now.
I'd like you to pretend that I started paying last month.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's what a pre-existing condition is. But that's the difference, I guess, between insurance and healthcare. And right. That's, you know, it's...
Well, and to be fair, what they have in England is not actually insurance. What they have is single payer, so that everybody pays, all the procedures are the same cost for everybody. And what they're saying now is that some people are going to be out of that system based on their lifestyle choices.
Well, and most people over a certain income level supplement that with private insurance plans because...
Yeah, exactly right.
They're not exactly keen on what they get out of the NHS itself.
Yeah, that happened to me. I went to school in England for a year, and the school recommended that we get a separate insurance policy. And it wasn't a lot of money.
It's really dual payer insurance, you know, if you actually want decent health coverage.
It depends on how much money you have.
But this decision by the NHS, that's based purely on how to help people and make them the most healthy, right? I mean, that's where it's coming from.
More of a
right?
resource rationing, actually. Yeah. They probably have a shortage of...
That's exactly what it is that
really?
They recognize that they don't have enough stuff to go around.
What?
And the reason that they don't have enough stuff to go around is because... There's no incentive for people to do more because they're not allowed to set their prices because there's a single
payer. Lower costs of things that they're buying.
Well, if they just tax the queen more, right?
Yes, except she refuses to be taxed. She mentions sovereign immunity. Oh, that's a terrible political wonky joke. I'm sorry. Yeah. But sovereign immunity is the right for a state to refuse to be sued. But in this case, Queen
Victoria. If they just taxed Bono a little bit more, they would have been able to afford the...
Bono, not English.
He's not English.
UK?
No.
Yeah.
He's Irish.
Yeah.
Which part of Ireland is he from?
Southern Ireland.
Dublin.
They wrote songs about this. That's the whole point of...
I couldn't think of another
Sunday Buddies, Bloody Sunday. Paul McCartney?
Mick Jagger?
Yeah, Taxman.
Taxman, that's George Harrison wrote that, but...
That's true.
Yes.
I was trying to think of a famous British artist.
All right, so let's go back to our rights that you have that are not necessarily exercised as often. So... One of the rights that everybody knows that they have is the Fifth Amendment, the right to not incriminate yourself.
Doesn't exercising that require some level of suspicion already that you might not be
in? It's funny. There's some rights that you want to exercise. I get some of these things, like, you know, exercise your right to vote, which, of course, you can't do today. Because
there's
no election. But, you know, there are regular elections. You go exercise that vote. If you don't do it, then you can't complain. But something like, you know, against an unreasonable search, like, am I supposed to do something suspicious? So the cops come and go, you can't search me. So
that's what a lot of people on YouTube make their...
There are a lot of videos for that. So if you just search for, am I being detained on YouTube, there are a tremendous number of videos that tell you how to deal with border police, too, when they stop you. Because... They're allowed to stop you and ask you a couple questions, but essentially you can say to them, look, do you have any reason to suspect that I'm not an American citizen? If they don't, they're supposed to let you go. Now, they don't like it when you do that because you're questioning their authority, but that's one of those rights that people should be exercising.
Right. Actually, I think there's too many people that do the if you're doing nothing wrong excuse.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who say, you know, I'm doing nothing wrong. I have nothing to hide. I want to make the police or whoever's lives easier,
Right.
So I submit to their request.
Exactly. I want to be a good citizen, and so I'm helping out the police. But in reality, you're actually not being a good citizen by surrendering your rights. And good police officers, and there are plenty of good police officers who also have videos about this, who will tell you, don't talk to the police. There's nothing good that can come out of it. If you have to, have a lawyer present. Make sure that what you're saying, and you say, you know, sometimes people say that when you invoke the Fifth Amendment, it makes you look guilty. When the Fifth Amendment is invoked, and it's invoked correctly, you would say something like, I'm worried that what I say might be misunderstood and make me look guilty. I don't want to take that risk. I don't want to appear guilty. And so I'm going to invoke my right to not incriminate myself. And when it's said that way, and you hear it said that way a lot of times, it should be enough to justify to people, oh, no, okay, that makes sense.
Not usually. Police are well-trained in the idea of trying to say, well, that, you know, what are you trying to hide here, Dan? Come on, I'm your friend. You should really be telling me the truth.
Sure.
And police use those tactics very much, and they try to coerce people to not invoke their Fifth Amendment rights quite often.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not necessarily them being a good cop or a bad cop. It's what they're trained to do.
Right.
And so the real blame doesn't lie in some cops being good or bad. It really lies in the way that
the system
that our elected officials are instructing our police departments to be trained to handle citizens on the street.
Yeah, and there certainly is an idea that people who are stopped because the police want to ask them questions are expected to respond. And it's interesting to think that you want to be helpful to the police. And certainly, if you can help to apprehend a criminal, you should help to apprehend a criminal. If you can help the police assist in some sort of investigation, you should do that. On the other hand, if there's a question where they're asking questions about you and you're a potential suspect, you can never give the police an answer that's good. Because the only person, if you're in an interrogation with the police officers, the only people who's looking out for you are you. The police may want to arrive at the truth, but fundamentally, they're trying to solve the case and you're the best lead that they've got. And if you provide them information, they're going to pursue that and something else might turn up. Your best option is to always say, I would like to have a lawyer. I'm going to refuse to testify on the grounds that something I could say might be misinterpreted and I might incriminate myself. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about rights, a lot about responsibilities. One of the most important responsibilities that you have is supporting our show. So, you know, we have a Patreon account, Patreon, patreon.com/libertyontheair. Go there. We offer all sorts of special features, like the best special features that you can call in and run a segment on the show. You know, we'll be your guests. We'll talk about what you want to call us in and make us talk about whatever you think is the liberty issue of the day. You want to talk about Trump? You want to talk about the UN? You want to talk about anything? We have in studio with us before the show starts. If you've watched the live stream, you see that we're in here for about 30 minutes before we start broadcasting. Give us a piece of your mind. Give us some hygiene tips. We get a couple posts every now and then about why didn't I shave for the show? It's radio, people. I'm not shaving for this show. All that being said, those are your rights. Those are your responsibilities. And we're going to keep talking about a few other rights that you have that you may not be exercising. For example, the Sixth Amendment guarantees you the right to trial by jury unless the matter involved is under $20 worth of $20 in the original text. So nowadays they say that amounts to $500. I'm no Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Joe fan, but... His trial, he was specifically charged with a crime that they made the fine under $500, which meant that he was not allowed to get a trial by jury, which means that it was just a judge that convicted him, even though he requested a jury trial. And Trump, when he pardoned him, specifically mentioned the fact that he was not allowed the right to a trial by jury of his peers. And, you know, that is something that's in the Constitution. And I think that people ought to more often say, I would like a trial by jury. Your lawyers won't advise it. It's going to cost you more money because court time costs money if you lose. And even if you win, sometimes if you're defending yourself. But the system is meant to work that way so that citizens have a say in what's happening in our justice system. So if you get a chance and you have to go to trial, ask for a trial by jury. Because that leads into the Seventh Amendment. The Seventh Amendment is where it specifies that juries can find you innocent, no matter what. We've talked about jury nullification before. The most famous cases being escaped slaves who made it here to Massachusetts. And the law of the land said that slaves had to be returned. That is, it's illegal to run away if you're a slave. And so the law of the land said that they should be prosecuted. But in Massachusetts, juries said, yeah, you know what? We don't think he did it. And the prosecutor said, well, look, I have the papers here that say this man is a slave, and here he is having run away from North Carolina. And they're like, nope, we don't think he did it. And he would be free. And so they made free men through the power of jury. It's another right that you have. And a lot of people don't know when they serve on a jury, they have the right to find a person innocent, or at least not guilty.
Well, I think juries get very lengthy instructions before they're released to figure that out. They are, and if they're not, that is one of the ways you can, if you're a defense attorney and your client is found guilty, and you can appeal on that basis that the jury instructions were not right.
Well, so it's very interesting. Actually, New Hampshire passed a law requiring that the juries be instructed about their right to nullify cases, and that was appealed and overturned by the Supreme Court, saying that they could not require because it's sort of a speech issue. It's a little bit BS.
Now, nullification might be slightly different. I mean, they're instructed on
right.
the merits of the case, but
generally they're not instructed on jury nullification. And in fact, if you were to ever say during the voir dire that I'm not a lawyer, but during the interrogation that you believed in jury nullification, you would never make it onto a jury. Because that freaks lawyers out, defense attorneys.
Did you hear about that pastor in Michigan?
No.
That was handing out pamphlets about jury nullification.
Oh, on the steps?
Yeah. And he was charged with illegally attempting to influence jurors by handing out information about jury nullification. No jury was even sat that day.
Yeah.
But in a kind of twist of fate, a Michigan jury found him guilty of jury tampering for handing out pamphlets about jury nullification.
Someone should have handed out pamphlets on the day.
Now, I'm wondering, was the pamphlet part of the evidence? And you're telling me that whole jury saw the pamphlet?
And they still found him guilty?
And found him guilty of that?
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, that would disprove their case, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because it can't be jury tampering to tell somebody about the rights. I mean, how is that against the law? What it comes down to is what we talk about every week on this show. We're never talking about right or left issues. We're talking about up and down issues. And up is liberty, and down is the power of the state. And we talk about jury nullification. We talk about the state's ability to search you when they want to. We're talking about an ever-increasing state that wants to limit your rights. And if you want those rights to be stronger, just like if you want your body to be stronger, exercise is the only answer. Exercise your rights every day.
Good night, Skippy.
People talk about sin taxes. The government taxes cigarettes because it says smoking is bad, and they want less people to smoke. The government taxes alcohol because it says drinking is bad, and they want less people to drink. So why is the government taxing income? Join that discussion and lots more, and listen live to Liberty on the Air with your host, Dan Fishman, every Saturday night at 11 p.m. right here on The Voice of Boston, AM 680 WRKO.